Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
My diaspora story, that's a tall order, but I will tell you a song.
I grew up with my white family in the American South. There weren't any other Samoans around, so I didn't grow up knowing much of my culture other than summer visits to the island.
It taps into a deep-seated knowledge that I don't belong here. I don't belong there. It is my destiny as part of the diaspora to always be on the go and to carry my home on my shoulders with me.
As I've grown up and learned more about myself, I feel more and more connected to that side of me, and I love to explore more about it.
It has a melody that transports me to my enchanting country. It just feels like home.
And in the song, there's also a feeling of longing and of affection towards our different homes.
It's Notes from America. I'm Kai Wright, and happy Labor Day weekend. It is the unofficial end of summer, sadly, if you ask me, and that means it's time to wrap up the second annual Notes from America Summer Playlist Project. So I'm joined once again by our producer, Regina Dahir. Hey, Regina.
Hi, Kai.
So you've been asking listeners to share songs that represent their personal diaspora stories all summer, and you've been taking those submissions and creating Spotify playlists that listeners can stream.
Yes, we've made three playlists so far, and they're available to stream right now at wnyc.org/playlist. They are really special, so listeners, if you missed it, go check it out. I'm adding our final submissions this weekend. And so, Kai, I thought it'd be cool to get one from an actual songwriter.
My name is Lolade. I'm originally from Nigeria, but I have lived in Ohio. I've lived in Philadelphia, and Houston is my home now.
Lolade performed live for us during our special Juneteenth broadcast from Houston. And when I checked in with her and told her about this playlist project, she immediately thought of one of her own songs, and it fits this project perfectly.
I wrote a song called Immigrant Song. It's one of the very first songs that I ever got professionally recorded. And that song, as much as it's about me and the perspective that I have on, you know, just being an immigrant in this country, it's more based around, I would say, my parents. The chorus of the song talks about these hands. And I got that visual in a dream, actually. And I just saw a vision of really worn hands. My mother, you know, she had to work as a beautician, and she worked with her hands. And I know a lot of people coming to this country from other places, you know, end up doing manual labor, and they have to literally and figuratively carry so much in their hands.
In the bridge, Lolade sings, "There's a fire in my bones, a piece of home, Africa. I count the days until we're together again." And as a child of Ghanaian immigrants myself, I take that two ways. This constant yearning I feel for the place I felt the most like home. And also, it's part of my identity. It's a fire within me. It's a thing that makes me, me.
Yeah, I love all of Lolade's music, actually. And honestly, listeners, if you didn't catch our Juneteenth special, do go dig around in our podcast feed to hear her incredible performances in that show. So, Regina, you've added Lolade to our playlist, and I know you've got more listener submissions to share with us this week, but I just want to name the point of this project quickly. You know, it's been a way to talk and to learn about all the incredible cultures and all the incredible experiences that we as Americans, as people living in these United States, carry around with us. So that's what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. And alongside the listener submissions, you've been talking with musicians and with cultural historians about some of the identities that have come up. You've got one more of those conversations to share with us this week, right?
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to talk with someone whose relationship to a particular diaspora is complicated. What happens when you're living in the U.S. as an immigrant and you're seen as part of a diaspora, but for you, it's not quite a fit?
My name is Nodia, and I am a Garifuna woman.
Nodia Mena is a former lecturer of Spanish in the Department of Languages, Literatures, and Cultures at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. She's currently completing her doctorate there, and she gave a TEDx talk a few years ago about her background as a Garifuna person, born in Honduras, who is living in the United States. Have you ever heard of the Garifuna people, Kai?
I have, but only in the most surface way, if I'm honest.
Well, the Garifuna are a mix of the indigenous people of the island of St. Vincent in the Caribbean and enslaved Africans from Spanish colonial ships that wrecked on the island. But in 1797, British colonizers expelled the Garifuna from their home in St. Vincent and sent them to Honduras as a punishment to the Spaniards who claimed it. Now, as Nodia remembers it, that history was never taught to her in schools. But she describes the way the Garifuna communities have preserved their own culture over the generations.
I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I remember my grandma made me this flower print skirt. And it was really wide, right? And then this red top. And my grandma was part of a club, El Club de los Tigres. That was a very popular club. And when I tell you about a club of Garifuna women who dance, think about a sorority. Right. So these women would come together and they will organize and they will have their dress, which is called La Valeria, because it was flower prints and the very colorful. And you will see happiness all around. Right. From the way they dress to the way in which they act and dance and so on. So it was La Feria. La Feria, it translates to the fair. But it was this La Feria de San Juan. And my grandma took me with her to not only to watch her dancing, but also for me to be part of the event. And that's the reason for which I remember, because not only did the event took over my mind because I was engaged with it, but it's also my body, right? Like listening to drumming for me is like, wait, I cannot not dance to the drumming, to the beats of a drum whenever I hear it. And it takes me back to that particular moment. So punta, the dance, our dance, that's what represents for Garifuna people. Punta is a dance that is performed by, you know, moving your body from side to side to the rhythm of the drum. And what happens is that the drummer, as they are playing, they play the drum, but they are also communicating with the dancer. And the rhythm that they play is basically dictated by the movement of the body of the person who's dancing to that rhythm. And, you know, people use the tip of their feet, you know, and then they move their, ay, Dios mío, las caderas. flew the name away from my mind. Your hips, you move your hips to the rhythm of the garawon, the drum. Garawon is the name of the drum in Garifuna. So that's what it is, right? You're just swaying your body to the rhythm of the drum and communicating with the drummer as well at the same time.
And How was that represented in Honduras growing up? Was it embraced by all people? Was it particularly at Garifuna events, all the above?
It's interesting that you asked that question, because there were periods of time where Punta was stigmatized, right? Because it was associated with being vulgar and just Black people do those things. Like, there is no way that it could be dignified, because it's coming from a group of people who are not necessarily part of the national identity of this country. And then, I don't know if you have heard of La Banda Blanca and Sopa de Caracol. La Banda Blanca was a group of musicians from Honduras who were all Latinos. And they basically performed this song, which is a Garifuna song, Sopa de Caracol. And they became super duper famous internationally for singing this song.
This was back in 1991, and the song climbed to number one on the Billboard Top Latin Song Chart. And to clarify, La Banda Blanca was not Garifuna and not Black. Punta got whitewashed.
From that point on, Latinos started dancing Punta because they saw their own people doing it.
Wow.
So now they could do it, right? But before, when it was only the Garifuna people, it was something that was associated with negative stigma. So now that after La Banda Blanca, and then they were on TV and they were all over the place, all over the world, now the Latinos want to do it. And what is the phenomenon that is happening now is that all of a sudden La Punta, the dance, is the national dance in Honduras. It has been adopted as a co-opted, but it has been adopted as the national dance. And now the Latinos are the ones who want to dance Punta. Yes.
That is fascinating history. I just wonder, what are your takeaways from that story? What do you think, as someone who's it's original to your culture, are you glad that it's being accepted more widely? What do you think?
No, I cannot be glad that it's being more accepted, because the word is not accepted, it's co-opted. Because if it was accepted, they will also understand the experiences of the people who originated the dance. But it's unfortunate that the only thing that is being done is to co-opt the good part of the emotion, the joy that they feel by dancing, but they want absolutely nothing to do with the experience of the people who are the originators of this dance. And I know that because most of the people who are marginalized, continue to be marginalized in the country, are the Garifuna people. And still to this day, the education system has not yet adapted a curriculum that represents this history of Garifuna people from a dignified perspective.
So how can you embrace the dance without understanding the history that created it?
That is the question, right?
We got to take a break. Coming up, Nodia Mena moves to the United States and wrestles with what it does and does not mean for her to be part of a Latin American diaspora. Stay with us.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rahima, and I help produce the show. I want to remind you that if you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Here's how. First, you can email us. The address is notes@wnyc.org. Second, you can send us a voice message. Go to notesfromamerica.org and click on the green button that says start recording. Finally, you can reach us on Twitter and Instagram. The handle for both is noteswithkai. However you want to reach us, we'd love to hear from you and maybe use your message on the show. All right, thanks. Talk to you soon.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's Notes from America. I'm Kai Wright. We've been talking all summer about what it means to consider yourself part of some kind of diaspora. And this week, our producer, Regina Dehier, is talking with someone whose experience with diaspora and with identity inside it is a bit more complicated. Nodia Minna is a professor at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. She's of Garifuna descent and grew up in Honduras. So to many people in the U.S., she's part of the Latin American diaspora, or even Afro-Latina. But she is not so sure either of those things are true.
Growing up, I internalized a lot the ways in which I was excluded from spaces that where I thought that I did not belong. So I internalized the sense that my culture was less than. Now, as growing up, then I started to realize that being in the spaces with members of my community were the places where I felt whole. That was the moment at which I felt the most joyful.
I'm curious to hear more about your life as a Garifuna person versus your life as a Honduran person. Did you see them as separate? And is that a common experience for Garifuna people?
Absolutely. It's an everyday conversation that I have with people that I know and who have come to that level of consciousness of understanding, right, what is going on, because not everyone really understands what is happening. It stems, of course, from this legacy of racism, right? The association of everything that is negative towards Black bodies and the effort that has existed in the region in Latin America, for example, to lump us all, meaning Black, Indigenous, and Europeans, into one and creating this idea of mestizaje, which means that we are all mixed and there is no reason for making any distinctions, because the more effort we make in establishing distinctions, then the more conflict it creates, which is so erroneous in from so many different levels, because by trying to lump us into one, that's the conflict from the get-go, right? That is the conflict, because you are dismissing my heterogeneity. You are dismissing my individuality. You're dismissing my humanity by trying to make me feel like I am like someone else and not appreciating the ways in which I am different and the ways in which I am unique. So it has been a very systematic effort because, first of all, in the education system, for example, in schools, like I said before, we did not learn anything about our cultural background. But we did learn about the Latinos or the Ladinos background, right? Mm-hmm. That's the predominant culture. So that is the dominant culture.
Yeah, so that's the dominant culture in Latin America. But part of your story takes place here in the U.S., You first moved to New York before relocating to North Carolina. What was that shift like?
There was a cultural shock for me when I moved to North Carolina because as a Garifuna woman who I'm not only Black, I am not only from Latin America, but now I am from this particular ethnic group who no one knows anything about. So, and in many different ways, one thing that I missed a lot was a community where I could feel that I was part of. Like, I felt like I didn't belong for too long in North Carolina. And then I realized that I was able to create community here with the Black community more than with the Latino community, right? Because what continues to happen in this side of the world with the Latino communities, those who are not Black, continue to associate themselves mainly with whiteness rather than trying to create community with Afro descendants from the same country. So although we speak the same language, it continues to be difficult to create meaningful connections in the Latino community who's not Black and the one that it is.
Yeah. And in the past few years here in the U.S., and I'm sure globally, there seems to be a distinct conversation about Black Latin Americans or Afro-Latinos. With your history, you have complicated feelings about identifying with that title. Can you tell me about that?
The issue that I find with identifying mainly as Afro-Latina is that I see it as another effort at lumping everyone who is Black in Latin America into one identity and completely dismissing our unique cultural background and our, we have many cultural differences. Because for one, when you think about a Latina, Afro-Latina from Brazil, for one, we don't speak the same language. We don't have the same story. We don't have the same experiences. And a Black Latina in Colombia, for example, also have different experiences with a Garifuna woman. I was in Cuba, and for me, it was a shocker to get to an airport and see Black people speaking Spanish who were in charge. That does not happen in Honduras.
Wow.
You get to the airport in Honduras, and if you see one Garifuna person working, not even to sweep the floors are we hired in those areas. So for me, when I went to that region, when I was in Cuba and I saw that, and I'm like, dang, yes, we can do this in Latin America.
I want to come back to dance. You talked about La Banda Blanca and their appropriation of punta dancing. You know, this inquiry started because I just became a licensed Zumba instructor. And to be honest, I have complicated feelings about it because the main cornerstones of Zumba are salsa, merengue, reggaeton, and cumbia. And these are very distinct to Latin America. They have rich histories. And I am not Latino at all. So I wonder what your reaction is to that. What would you say to someone like me who's trying to figure out my place and what's the difference between appreciation and appropriation?
People in a particular place are exposed to a more diverse culture. I think that there is a tendency to want to have the desire of understanding more and being involved more and engaging more with cultures that is different than yours, right? So if that is what is happening, I applaud the person who brings their bodies into spaces to engage with cultures that they're not familiar with, because I see it as a step into trying to understand more. That's the way I see it. And listen, this is a very important question because appreciation has to be unpacked, right? Like, what are you appreciating, right? Are you appreciating the way in which a body moves and what kind of effect does that have in you? Are you appreciating the history that comes with the movement? Are you appreciating the history? Are you appreciating the current state of that particular group? So what is it that you appreciate? I think we have to be more complex about understanding what the appreciation is. It's not an answer that could be a yes, no. It's about understanding deeply, you know, what is going on.
I really do strive to understand more about and be engaged more in different cultures, even if I don't always get it exactly right. Because as Nadia points out, there's a blurry line between appreciation and appropriation. And so I'm excited to continue on this pursuit of learning more about the nuances and complexities of our identities. And I'm excited to continue to deepen rather than flatten our ideas of culture in general.
Said, Regina, and with that context, let us get back to appreciating and learning about some of our listeners' own experiences in diaspora. You're going to share with us a final sampling of listener submissions to the Notes from America summer playlist. Yeah?
Let's do it. And I'll start with someone who does identify as Afro-Latina.
I'm Natalia, and I'm from Brazil. So I just moved to New York City because I'm doing my master's at Columbia. I came all the way from São Paulo to here. And it means the world to me because I'm a Black person, and my grandpa and my grandma barely went to school, and my father and my mom had to fight a lot to get their degree. And I mean, I got to go to a great university in Brazil, and now I'm here studying at Columbia in one of the best journalism schools on earth. So yeah, it's a dream. It's a dream. So when I was flying here to New York, I was listening to this song from Beyoncé. It's called Bigger. It's from her album On the Lion King. And it's a song about how we are part of something bigger than ourselves. And it's a song that moves me a lot. Like she's talking about a legacy in terms of family, but it touches me in this point of how the way we interact with the world by being a journalist is something that leaves a legacy for other people. I really love this song. It's beautiful. And her voice is super powerful. You got my blood in ya, and you're gonna run. That would be my song. And I've listened to that in other difficult times for me. In Brazil, when I was, I don't know, doubting myself, I would listen to that song to get myself back together.
My name is Danny, and I am the child of immigrants from Lebanon. So I'm a first-generation American. I grew up just south of Boston, Massachusetts. I think a lot of us in the generation that I'm in really thought of 9/11 as a very defining moment. Obviously, you know, it was an incredibly tragic and horrific event. I think the aftermath of it too really impacted our communities in terms of just, you know, sort of racism toward Arab Americans. And so I think a lot of us collectively felt really shaped by the response of 9/11 and still face that. I think we still face a lot of those things. Amongst the Arab diaspora, and probably the Arabs in general, but I know for sure amongst the diaspora, we always joke that it's like the same, you know, 4 to 5 songs that are played at every single Arab wedding. And so one song that I always think of at any Arab wedding, almost without fail, is Noor Al Ayn by Amr Diab. Amr Diab is just an iconic Egyptian singer. He's been around for the last 40 years or so, and Noor Al Ayn was his big, big, big pop hit in the 90s. And it still gets played at every Arab wedding. It still gets played at big family functions, what have you. It's a place of good vibes. It's a song of good vibes. It's a song that brings back nostalgia and things like that.
Hi, my name is Scott. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'm not exactly certain that this is what you had in mind, but I consider myself part of the diaspora of Ireland. I'm Irish by ethnicity. And I like the song Zombie when I think about the fact that at least partially my homeland, my family's homeland, my ancestors' homeland is still partially colonized. And Zombie just completely embodies that story. It's by the Cranberries, of course, and it's probably the best grunge song that was ever made. Thank you.
Scott, yes, that is exactly what we have in mind. So thank you for that submission. But I have to say, one thing we didn't have in mind at the start of this project is those of us who consider ourselves part of some kind of diaspora inside the United States. So like me, for instance, I have always understood my identity as part of what's called the Great Migration, this movement of Black Americans from the South to the North. My grandparents were part of that migration, and though I'm not actually Southern, I grew up in the Midwest, I've still always felt that their Black Southern culture is somehow part of my own identity.
Wow, so Kai, you understand what it's like straddling two cultures too.
Yeah, I do.
Well, now I have to ask, what song do you want to add to the playlist?
I have given it some thought, I'll be honest, and I'm going to go with Gladys Knight and the Pips, Midnight Train to Georgia.
He's me.
Georgia,
which is, of course, a song about chasing a man. But still, I have always also heard in it that bit of yearning to reclaim or rediscover something you or your family left behind.
You're not alone in this thought at all. We did get a couple submissions from listeners who also took the prompt to think about their place in a diaspora within the United States. So maybe this can be our last submission.
Hi, my name is Coop, and I'm calling from Nacogdoches in the Piney Woods of East Texas. The song I'd like to contribute for the American Diaspora Project is That's Right, You're Not From Texas by Lyle Lovett. My mom and her whole family was born in Texas, and so it felt like a cruel twist of fate at first when I was born in New Jersey. And my parents divorced, and we moved back to Texas at an early age. And so in my family, we joke that if you're from north of I-10 in Houston, you're a Yankee. So I was especially considered a Yankee. But being that we were from the Houston area and my family's country music fans, I also listened to a lot of Lyle Lovett growing up. And when I heard the song, That's Right, You're Not From Texas, which is about just being a Texan, even if you aren't, it made me feel a lot better about myself because I've always considered myself a Texan. Thank you. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas.
And with that, you can now listen to the completed playlist on Spotify. Just go to wnyc.org/playlist to stream it. The songs are hits all year round. We hope you enjoy. And thank you, thank you, thank you to those who were a part of this project. It's been a blast getting to know some of you better through your submissions.
And we're going to continue this conversation with you about our many different intersecting and overlapping and sometimes even conflicting identities. This word identity, it has obviously become polarizing in the larger political conversation. But we are all shaped as individuals by all kinds of larger social and cultural forces. They're just part of our stories, for better, sometimes for worse. And when we share any part of those stories, it's an intimacy. And it's one that, as Regina said earlier, helps us deepen our understanding of this wildly diverse country that we all share. So stay tuned. We'll be back to you in the fall with another exercise just like this one. And a hearty thank you to all who have participated in this and in our ongoing effort to just foster community and conversation here on this show. Notes from America is a production of WNYC Studios. We love to hear from you, so if you heard anything that sparks a thought or a question, do hit us up. Go to notesfromamerica.org. Look for the little green record button. You can leave us a voice note right there. Just be sure to include at least your first name and where you're located. Mixing and theme music by Jared Paul. The Notes from America team also includes Karen Frohman, Regina Dehir, Rahima Nassa, Kushan Avadar, David Norville, and Lindsay Foster Thomas. Andre Robert Lee is our executive producer, and I am Kai Wright. Thanks for listening.
Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.